Blog Talk Radio.
You did not wait for me to draw nigh to you, but you clothe yourself in frail humanity. You did not wait for me to cry out to you, but you let me hear your voice calling me.
You don't have to let the devil rule over your life.
But he came, he died on the cross for your sins. And he's right there where you are now. All you gotta do is ask him to forgive you for all of your sins. And he's right there, just and able to forgive you for all of your sins and blot out all of your transgressions. That's why he came. He came for you. He came to seek and save you. Why don't you accept?
Thank you for calling. Thank you for joining me today on Block Talk Radio. This is your host, Evangelist Benson. I hope everyone had a great weekend. Please call someone, text someone, and let them know I am on the air. Tell them to tune in weekly right here on Block Talk Radio. This is Victory Against All Odds. I'm here every Monday at 12:30. So please join me. A radio talk show for the family where we talk about some of the struggles and obstacles that families face as it relates to issues of child abuse, depression, domestic violence, substance abuse, suicide, and sexual abuse. So let's talk. My email address is odds, O-D-D-S, underscore, against, underscore, the letter U, at yahoo.com. Please email me. Let someone, if you have a question, or if you need assistance, and I want to also let you know that my chat room is open. Again, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so I thought it would be fitting to end the month with my special guest on today, the Honorable Judge Wanda G. Bryant from the North Carolina Court of Appeals, and I think she's here, yes. Okay. Also, I wanted to just, for those who are first-time listeners, wanted to just let you know domestic violence can be defined as a pattern of behaviors in any relationship that is used to gain or maintain power and control over another person, an intimate partner. Domestic violence can happen to anyone of any race, age, sexual orientation, religion, or gender. It can happen to couples who are married, living together, who are dating. Domestic violence affects people of all socioeconomic backgrounds and educational levels. In other words, domestic violence is not prejudice. Today, I do have a special guest with me, the Honorable Judge Wanda Bryant from the North Carolina Court of Appeals. Thank you for joining me. I just wanted to give you a brief bio. It's definitely not all of her. About Judge Bryant, she was born in Brunswick County, North Carolina, where she received her degree from Duke University. I'm sorry. Yes, and her law degree from North Carolina Central University. In 1983, Judge Bryant did make history as the first female and the first African-American prosecutor in the 13th Presidential Prosecutorial District serving the coastal counties of Bladen, Brunswick, and Columbus counties. Her experience as an assistant district attorney in her own hometown helped shape her unbiased approach to the justice system, as well as her strong sense of fairness and justice. Judge Bryant was appointed to the North Carolina Court of Appeals in February 2001 by Governor Michael Easley. She was successfully elected in 2004 and will be up for re-election in 2012, which, of course, is next year. Judge Bryant has served on many boards and commissions, including current services on the following. She's currently on the Duke University School of Nursing Boards for the Advisors. She is chairperson for the North Carolina Central University Law School Board of Visitors, the North Carolina Museum of Natural Science Friends Board, Smith Saver Scholarship Board. Judge Bryant is the recipient of numerous honors and awards, including most recently the Presidential Award of Distinguished for Public Service from the General Baptist State Convention of North Carolina, Incorporated in 2011. She is also YWCA Academy of Women, the GFWC Women of Achievement Awards, and an Outstanding Service in the Law Award. Also the Law Dragon Leading Judges in America. She is a wife to a wonderful husband, and she who is the assistant dean and they both reside in Durham, North Carolina, with their teenage son. Welcome, the Honorable Judge Wanda Bryant. Are you on the air?
I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. I am so nervous. I don't know why I'm nervous, but I am so nervous. Thank you for taking your time out with me today. And you have a excellent, I am just so impressed with your bio. I certainly didn't read all of it because I purposely wanted you to be able to talk about some of these yourself. One of the questions that I certainly wanted to start off in asking you is, do you remember that aha moment when you realized that this is what you wanted to do, and what was that like for you?
Well, you know, actually, there were probably two aha moments, so I don't recall the first as vividly as the second, but I'd say the first was sometime when I was about 9 years old. I knew at that point that I wanted to be a lawyer, and that shaped the trajectory of my life from that point forward, literally. I was one of the first students to integrate the public school system down in Brunswick County, where you mentioned that I was born and raised, and that shaped my life more than I knew for a long time. But I knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. I knew that it was the 60s. There was a lot going on. You know, you could see on the black and white TV, which is what we had, the marches, the fire hoses, the dogs. You saw and knew and could feel everything that was going on, certainly in our small communities and nationwide. And I think that had such an impact on me. I saw then Thurgood Marshall and the other lawyers with the NAACP that had already argued and won Brown versus Board of Education, had a lot of other cases going through the court system up in the U.S. Supreme Court. So I think from a very early age, I knew for many reasons, most of which I couldn't even articulate then and probably still can't do so real well now, but for all those reasons, I wanted to be a lawyer. And that is what drove me to probably where I am right now, certainly through 3 years of education at Duke. I finished in 3 years, on to law school at North Carolina Central, and then to be a prosecutor, an assistant U.S. attorney, a senior deputy attorney general, and now on the Court of Appeals. And that's the second aha moment would be probably when Governor Easley asked me if I might consider being on the Court of Appeals. And I was stunned, taken aback, but mm-hmm. It felt really good, it felt really right, and it was sort of a, aha, that is what I'd like to do with my life right now. And it's turned out to be just a wonderful thing for me and for my family, and hopefully for the citizens of the state of North Carolina.
I'm so impressed. I really am so impressed. You have such a rich history. Can you give us some insight regarding the historical perspectives of domestic violence in North Carolina? as a prosecutor, or however you want to address that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll try. Certainly, it would be, you know, from my personal perspective, and I think years ago I used to know a lot more about what was going on from a sort of a policy perspective, certainly statewide and nationally as well, because I was doing a lot of work in that arena. Today, as you noted, I am on the Court of Appeals. I've been here for 10 years, more than 10 years, almost 11. And so the perspective I'll give you about domestic violence is historical and is based on sort of my personal past as opposed to my present. Obviously, obviously, with my presence on this radio program, I do still have some interest and concern about this area, but there's nothing that I'm doing right now that, of course, could be considered, you know, advocacy or whatever. But as you mentioned, when I came out of law school, I became a prosecutor. You noted that I was the first African American and the first female prosecutor in Brunswick, Columbus, and Bladen counties. That was back in 1982, or actually 83, when I took office in January of 83. And so that was a big event in my hometown, and that's why some of the information on my bio talked about that being a prosecutor in my hometown sort of shaping my unbiased approach to justice, because I had to learn how or to instill within myself and with others, the fact that here I am as a prosecutor, I've got to prosecute people that I knew from high school or grade school or whatever, sometimes relatives. And back then in Brunswick County, we didn't recuse ourselves just because there was someone on the calendar that we knew. We had to prosecute the case if there was a violation of the law. So I found out early on, just going by the rule of law and doing that and applying it as fairly and appropriately as possible, that I could do my job and I could still do it with the respect of my peers and even those that I had to argue should be put to jail sometimes. So very, you know, very interesting start to my career. But as a female prosecutor, I early on was one of the first, or I early on was sort of designated to interview the children or interview the victims of domestic violence and that kind of thing. So I started to handle more of those cases than the other prosecutors, generally speaking. We all had to do them, but I think it was because I was female that I did more of them and eventually came to specialize in child sexual assault and adult rape cases, among other types of violence against females. So early on, I tried a lot of these cases. Unfortunately, early on, I dismissed a lot of these cases, domestic violence cases I'm talking about now specifically, usually, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, you know, those kinds of cases. Because early on in those days, if a victim had taken out a warrant and the perpetrator had been arrested, if the victim came to the DA's office and asked that the case be dismissed, nine times out of ten, probably, and I may be overstating this, I hope I am overstating it, but so many times we dismissed those cases at the request of the victim. And then we started to, you know, notice a pattern. These cases kept coming back. And then, you know, within a few years of my being there, we started not only not dismissing the cases, but we would have the victim, if she insisted, and usually it was a she, insisted on having a case dismissed, we would say, well, if we dismiss this case, you will then be charged with a frivolous and malicious prosecution and be required to pay the cost of court. And that was kind of an incentive to keep people from dismissing the charges.
Wow.
And then we sort of moved from there to then we will not dismiss the charges at all. This case is State of North Carolina versus XYZ perpetrator. This is not ABC victim versus XYZ perpetrator. This is a criminal case. Criminal case is against the state of North Carolina. Therefore, we will prosecute this case to the fullest extent of the law. If you, ABC victim, do not wish to come to court, we will subpoena you to come to court. You will be required by law and by the subpoena, you know, to testify. So sort of from one extreme to another, and I think all of us, and I say all of us, I think prosecutors all across the state and perhaps in many other states were grappling with just how to handle what was acknowledged to be a very serious problem and how best to prosecute it as a criminal case. And those were the early years of struggling with of what to do about these cases and how best to prosecute, like I said, something that was a serious, were serious cases. And so I went from doing that to eventually becoming a senior deputy attorney general in the attorney general's office, where we began to do some things statewide, a lot of different policy shifts. I was appointed chairperson of the first ever Violence Against Women Act Committee for the state of North Carolina. I chaired that committee for 3 years. That was under the Governor's Crime Commission. Then Governor Hunt set it up. There was a huge stream of money that came out of Washington, D.C. because the federal Violence Against Women Act had been passed. I guess it was in probably 1994, if I'm not mistaken, and I believe Joe Biden was one of the ones who introduced that bill, if I'm not mistaken. But that bill provided for money to protect women, to set up protocols, you know, to protect women and children in particular, to set up protocols, to do things in a coordinated way, and it eventually had the effect of allowing more domestic violence shelters to be built in North Carolina, more personnel to be involved in safe passage of people leaving, you know, a home and or a situation where there's domestic violence, being able to take your children and leave and go to a safe place and that kind of thing. So there was a lot of money that came into the state as a result of that Violence Against Women Act and a lot of specific protocols that were put into place. And I have to say a lot of wonderful women, particularly strong advocates who are still out there doing yeoman's work, but a lot of women who were part of that committee and who are still, you know, like I said, doing the work. After 1998, when the Violence Against Women Act was merged into another committee, we also had a domestic violence task force. And I was co-chair of that task force. And I believe that task force was the precursor to the current Domestic Violence Commission, North Carolina Domestic Violence Commission. And that commission is housed in the North Carolina Department of Administration, so it's a full part of, you know, government services to victims. And to sort of wrap up my personal historical perspective, today I still am somewhat tangentially connected to the commission because from time to time they call me over to swear in new members of the commission. So I get to go in and speak to the folks that I worked with years ago when I headed the Violence Against Women Act Committee, VAWA we called it, and to see the new members of the commission and to, in fact, be involved in swearing them in to do their duties under that commission.
Okay. You have covered most of my questions. One of my questions was, as a former chair of the first Violence Against Women's Act in North Carolina, what was the goal and what were you able to accomplish in that role? But it sounds like you've just pretty much answered most of that.
I was going to say I could add just a couple of things. And
okay.
So much. I wish I could remember more. But I do remember us working as a committee and a commission, working on, like, the protocols, working on, like, the domestic violence protective orders. Now that's the standard form as a part of the administrative office of the courts that I'm a part of, the judicial branch. That's the standard form now. But in the early days, we struggled with a domestic violence protective order and what should be contained in it and how it should be implemented and that kind of thing, not to mention protocols for prosecutors. We we put protocols in place for whether or not there should be a no-drop policy, and I think that's what we had for a while. I'm not sure what the policy is now. I'm pretty sure it's not totally no-drop. It's probably some combination of we're not going to drop these domestic violence cases, but at the same time, we're going to listen to, you know, the needs and concerns of the victim in the case. But we worked on those types of policies and protocols, and all of that has led to, I think, a lot of what we have today, which is some specialized training for prosecutors, specialized training for judges, and, of course, the coordinators. These are all people that are part of the criminal justice system in particular. And we have, under AOC's banner, a specialist, a domestic violence specialist that I think helps judges and probably clerks and others in court with respect to domestic violence issues. So there is a specialist that's under the auspices of the Administrative Office of the Courts, which is, I think, very interesting. And that's a position that was definitely not available 10 years ago or certainly not 20 years ago.
And I was going to ask you, because being one to have had to go through that system, I can remember being in court and being nervous, not knowing what to do, and having, I guess it would be that specialist, to pull me aside in that little bitty room and just kind of, if you will, prompt me in what I needed to present before the judge, and so that I wouldn't be nervous, and so I kind of had my thoughts and my collections together. And I remember failing miserably and having to go back into that room a second time because I got nervous, and just having that person hold my hand and walk me through that process really helped me get my story out.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because, again, that's one of the things that we sort of helped develop in the early years, the victim witness assistance. When I came to the Attorney General's office, we started a child victim witness assistant program. Specifically targeted toward children, but there was also the victim witness assistance that did exactly what you're doing, and that is adult victims of domestic violence and abuse. This coordinator, this victim witness assistant, was there to assist the victim at each step of the proceedings through court, from helping to get prepared to testify. To determining what went on, letting the assistant know if there were any issues, any follow-up from the perpetrator, anyone putting pressure on the person, to putting together your statement at the end and any reimbursement that might have been due the victim. So that person wore a lot of hats in the criminal justice system. Back when I was there, and I've seen that activity increase even more so to be even more victim-centered and victim-friendly, so to speak.
You are incredible. Hats off to you. Hats off to you.
Well, to you as well.
Thank you. I finally answered the call and realized that this cannot be a secret, you know, that there are people out there who still are suffering in silence. And I just wanted to be used as a voice to get the message out there that you no longer have to suffer in silence, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be child abuse, whether it be sexual abuse, you know, even depression and suicide, which are those undertone, you know, agents that come along with having to deal with those big issues. Those come attached with it. You know, if you're dealing with depression, if you're dealing with sexual abuse and child abuse and domestic violence, then the depression is going to come and the substance abuse is coming because, you know, it's medicating that pain. And then, of course, you've got suicide tendencies because you're tired of dealing with the issues. And I dealt with all of those things, and it was time for me to put it out there. However, my platform was supposed to be, I never thought it was going to come this way. And I just wanted to to be a part of that and letting people know that you do not have to suffer in silence. There are laws out there, there are tools out there, there are strategies out there that can help you no longer stay a victim but become a victor, become victorious and walk in victory, that you do not have to stay a victim. You don't have to stay there, but you can move and no longer be on Stuck Street, you know, no longer be on Pain Boulevard, no longer be, you know, unmovable, but there is a process, and that there are people out there, there are tools out there, there are laws out there that protect you, you know, as children, as adults, being a, you know, a victim of child abuse, you know, I didn't have those tools. I didn't know they were out there. And then even when I found out that they were out there, I didn't have access because being stuck where I was. So this is my way of giving back to the community, if you will. And I thank you so much for
Thank you. I just wanted to say again, I wanted to thank you because what you've described is, I mean, you actually are a gift to the community, and I hope that there are many people who are listening and taking advantage of the gift that you are giving, because it is one that is necessary to anyone who's suffered from this kind of pain and violence. And so thank you for all that you're doing.
You're welcome. I do have callers. I'm not sure if you have time. I'm not sure if you were prepared.
I allotted just a short period of time, but I will take one or two questions, if that's all right.
Sure.
Yeah, I can.
Okay, let me open up my line here. Hello, caller. You're on the air. This is Victory Against All Odds. Do you have a question for my guest or myself? Hello?
Oh, no. I'm just listening.
Okay. Okay,
good,
no
right?
Question.
Yes. I just came in on the line and just wanted to listen to the program.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
Okay.
Okay, let me. I think I got a call coming out of Colorado. Good morning, Dr. Duke.
Good morning. I'm actually was listening. I had doing kind of a multiple things getting started this morning, but I wanted to just say to your guests, it's really appreciated that, you know, the work that's being done, because we have such an enormous amount of work to be done for both of you. And this being the last day for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, it's a lot. But I know that if we keep exposing, confronting, and revealing and talking of these issues, we will make a headway, and that someone will be definitely blessed by your efforts. We do appreciate both of you.
Thank you very much. I hope that wherever you are, you're spreading that word, and it sounds like from your comments that that's very likely the case, but thank you.
Yes, I have a new book that was just released this month called Teddy Bear, Stolen Innocence, and it's the subtitle is A True Story of Incest and Sexual Abuse in a Black Family. Mm. And at 65, God has called me over the years now, but to finally get this book out, to reach out to men, women, boys and girls, but men and women, to know that we have these issues in our families and that they need to be dealt with in a loving and caring manner, and not to continue as it's been done through the church and other avenues to hide this stuff and make it a taboo. That was not at all what was intended by the Apostle Paul in his writing. He wanted us to deal with it in a very healthy in a very loving manner, caring manner, and to help one another to be strong and grow from these things.
Awesome.
Thank you for calling, Dr. Duke.
God bless you, dear heart. And keep doing the good work.
Thank you. I have one other caller. You have a moment. Let's
Okay. I have about 60 seconds. I have someone waiting. But thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling. You're on the air. This is Victory Against All Odds. You have a question or a quick comment for my guest?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, you're on the air. Do you have a quick comment or question for my guest?
Evangelist Benton, God bless you. This is Apostle Robinson.
Good morning.
I share in with Dr. Dew. Thank God for you and Justice Bryant for the wonderful avenues that God has used to make available for the people, and you're making a difference. I think that we'll continue the fight and go forth and do what needs to be done to make the difference in the community. And, of course, we always welcome individuals who pioneered these things. And we can look back and say, this person started it. Now, we are responsible to take the vision and keep the vision going forth. So God bless you, and know that you are appreciated. Just as bright, your voice gets to be heard throughout the United States and several countries today. So, again, your track record speaks for itself. You get to make history again and go on to, you know, the continental U.S. And people know that your efforts and your vision and your dream made the difference in North Carolina. And the same goes for Evangelist Benton and Dr. Dew out in Colorado. I thank God for both of you. So know that we are thankful to the difference that you are making.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so pleased to be among such exalted company, and I would ask for your prayers as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be praying.
Thank you, Papa Robinson, for calling.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And Ms. Benton, thank you again for having me on. I do have someone waiting, but I've enjoyed being a part of your show. Thank you again, and please don't hesitate to call on me.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for calling, and thank you for being a part of my show. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I just wanted to say again, thanking my guest, Judge Wanda Bryan, for being a part of our show. And I also wanted to thank my listeners for tuning in today as we close out Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but definitely does not necessarily end us talking about domestic violence. Domestic violence happens every day, and I just want to send shouts out for her as she continues in her current role as a appeals judge. And I also want to say to anyone who happens to be listening, if you are dealing with domestic violence, if you are in a situation where you are find yourself in a compromising position where someone is taking advantage of you or you are in pain or someone is hurting you, that you do not have to stay stuck on Stuck Street, that you do not have to continue to be on Payne Boulevard, that you have tools and strategies that you can use to find yourself in a different perspective, get on the phone, call someone, come up with a plan to escape, that there are shelters, as Judge has talked about, that they have put laws in place, there are protective orders that have been put in place by by some of her own effort through the Domestic Violence Women's Act Committee in North Carolina, or whatever state you happen to be in, that all you need to do is be able to pick up a telephone and let someone know that you are in need. Someone on the other end is waiting on you. If you need help, please don't hesitate to email me in my inbox at odds_against_AGAINST_U@yahoo.com. I will be glad to assist you. I will be able to
I would be glad to assist you in whatever resources that you need in your state. Doesn't necessarily have to be North Carolina. I am one with plenty of resources to get you the help you need if you just need to talk. Please do not hesitate to call me, to email me, to inbox me, to Facebook me. We all have challenges in our lives, but again, as I always say, we do not have to be subject to someone else's hurt or and or pain. We do not have to allow anyone to belittle us. We do not have to be talked down to, screamed at, punched, or kicked. It is possible to walk in freedom and deliverance from domestic violence. Also, against all odds, you can walk in victory on today. You, too, can overcome all odds against you. Every obstacle that comes and tries to block you and to keep you bound, do not be bound any longer. I am here to help you walk in total victory. So stay tuned next week so we can begin to understand the physical and the emotional challenges that you are facing for yourself and for your loved ones, for your friends, your neighbors, your classmates, your coworkers, your church family, the neighbor down the street, your child. Please do not turn your head to domestic violence, to sexual abuse. Do not ignore the signs, the symptoms, and the evidence. Together, we can learn powerful strategic weapons to combat the seemingly unsurmountable obstacles that life can bring and begin the process of healing and, most important, forgiving. We have to forgive. My email address, again, is odds_against_U@yahoo.com. Or you may Facebook me at facebook.com/victory, A, O. Thank you for listening. Join me next time, November the 14th. At 12:30, I will be opening my lines. Thank you, my guests in the guest room, guest 8871. Also thanking Brother Drew Jackson for joining me in the chat room. Thank all my listeners. I love you. Please don't take it lightly that you come to support me and I come to support you. Thank you. If you have any questions, need any help, do not hesitate to reach out. Have a blessed day, and remember to walk in victory.
You did not wait for me to draw nigh to you, but you clothed yourself in frail humanity. Did not wait for me to cry out to you, but you let me hear your voice calling me.
Wait for me.
but you let me.